For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Our toll-free number to call in is 844-320-4299. And again, if you cannot listen to this entire show today, this show is rebroadcasted on Saturdays at 1 p.m. In addition, you can always download all the podcasts and listen to them at your pleasure. The point of Reclaiming the Republic is not just me getting on and ranting about communism, Platonism, the Federalist Papers, and all these other things. The point of Reclaiming the Republic is literally motivating you and everyone else in taking some level of course of action. I can't do this alone. We have to actually become active. And so that's either active in showing up at rallies, participating in local organizations. Sometimes it's just a matter of funding. A lot of people that supported George Washington did not support him by going out and fighting in the cold or whatever the austere conditions were. They supported the cause via supplies, finance, and so forth. Either way, for Reclaiming the Republic, this has to have some level of support. And I appreciate those who are supporting this show. Many parts of these shows will refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. Consequently, to stay abreast with our content, you will need to listen to all of these shows to garner what Republic Review is and how we can reclaim the Republic. Don't forget, you can download these podcasts, as I just said, and that is at ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. For local announcements, the Republican Coffee Club, this Friday morning at 7 o'clock, they will be discussing, and it's a quarterly round robin discussion going around the table. The military industrial complex, was Eisenhower right that there was such a thing or a creation of the military industrial complex? Next week, Mayor Dave Condon will be there. Yep, that's right, the mayor. And the following week, Steve Bush will be talking about the Endangered Species Act and how it's going to affect you directly, or how it's already affecting you. And hopefully with some of Trump's appointments, they will affect you maybe less. Again, this is always at the Hamilton and Hancock. This is not at the Hamilton. This is on Trent and Hamilton. And it's right there in the Bangkok Thai restaurant. And there is a total of $6 if you want a donut, just $5 if you want to come and participate. The Grassroots Northwest next movie night, which will be a week from today, will be meeting the candidates in Darcy's restaurant on, what is that, Sprague Avenue? And I think that's Applewood on the other side. Either way, it is 10502 East Sprague. And it starts at 5:30. So if you want to get there and find out which candidate you want to support, again, I was just talking about getting active, getting out, supporting. So if you want to find out who you want to endorse, who you want to put your money behind or what have you, that's where the candidates will be. So this is a must-attend event. For those avoiding the need to get involved, remember the old adage, united we stand, divided we fall. As far as the candidates go, I highly recommend getting involved and supporting those who are not trying to create big government programs here in Spokane, and try to support those who are supporting businesses large and small to invest and help Spokane grow. I also want to plug a small little enterprise up in the Suncrest area. It's a You Pick Flower kind of enterprise where there is basically a large garden where you can walk through and you can pick out all the flowers that you want to give to somebody that maybe you care for. Are you in the doghouse? Do you need to get out of the doghouse? Going and handpicking flowers might actually be the ticket. And so it's a unique business idea and concept that the proprietors have started up there. And they're at, if you want to write this down, it'll be on my podcast page on Reclaiming the Republic. So once I get the podcast up, you'll actually be able to find below where all the podcasts are, all the pertinent show information. I'm going to reference a part of that information that's already there in just a couple minutes, but it's at 12523 West Sunnyvale up in Nine Mile Falls. So this is a great ticket to getting out of the doghouse, or if you've got some significant anniversary or event this time of year. You know that the UPIC flower garden was supposed to start before Mother's Day, but Mother Nature was not too accommodating, coming a little slow this year and warming up. Want to give you a little report. I attended a Spokane Valley candidate event a little over a week ago, and I noticed some interesting things as I attended this, that amongst almost all of the candidates that I think were very staunch conservatives, they all preferred at-large elections, vice representative elections of districts. And that kind of goes in towards a general democracy instead of representative government. And I kind of scratched my head and I asked a couple of the candidates, I go, do you realize that you're endorsing democracy over a representative government? And they kind of looked at me and they go, you know, I didn't realize that. I didn't recognize the fact that that's what we were doing here. And I go, technically, the more representative our government is, the better off we are. You know, maybe in a small scale, there might be some small justifications, but I can tell you that whenever you lose your representation, you lose your government. The framers understood this, and that's why I've had, you know, several segments discussing republicanism and why it is so important. So anyway, just thought that you'd find that interesting, that the candidates kind of had this preference towards a general election vice a representative. They all shared concerns over public safety that I think is kind of interesting. And they were all talking about, very similar to Spokane, you know, how can they improve public safety by, you know, improving, you know, whether it be staffing, equipping with the police force or what have you. And they're very dependent on the county sheriff for law enforcement and so forth. And so I, you know, as I was thinking about what they were saying, and I constantly refer to the Constitution. And what does the Constitution say? And if you look at the paradigm back when the framers were, you know, creating this great republic, they didn't have police forces. Their police force literally was the sheriffs, and they didn't have, you know, the FBI and all of this law enforcement. It wasn't necessary. The reason it wasn't necessary is because people were, you know, constantly in church. They were very righteous people, and they didn't need that kind of policing. And as a matter of fact, if you listen to my Christmas show last year, I talked about the fact that it was the anarchists and the progressives that caused police forces to start actually getting organized here in the United States. And so what does the Constitution say? Well, actually, if you look at Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 16, it talks about the staffing or the funding and training and equipping a militia, and that the states were to use militias. Well, what had happened to the state militias is we've allowed them to become centralized, and we've allowed the state militia to become a National Guard. And if you look at how the National Guard is now employed, it is now employed as a centrally managed entity, and it has lost its involvement and its placement in the community that militias are supposed to fulfill. And so we've completely gotten off track of the intent of militias and why the Constitution supported those. And why I hear music in my ear must mean that I've got sponsors coming up that I need to get you to hopefully support, because they support me in this show. And so I'll be back right after this break. Well, we're back, and during the break, I went on so many different tangents, I completely forgot where I was, and so I don't know what we'll talk about from now on. Oh, that's right, we were talking about the militia, and a constitutional perspective of our security and safety and so forth. And if you look at a militia, the militia is a local organized group, just like a police force, except it's not a full-time force. We have benefits that we provide law enforcement and all of these things, but their job is not to become. And I was actually talking before the radio show about the genesis that causes organizations to come along, whether that be the unions, the NAACP, the John Birch Society. It doesn't matter the organization. There's all of these different organizations that get created, and they have this great relevance, or they have this great justification as the solution for the time. The question is, do they maintain that relevance as time goes on? And do they have an obsolescent type of clause so that, hey, if we're no longer, relevant, then we are obsolete and we need to go away? Because organizations that get created, they get created with really good founding principles and to solve, real problems. But the problem I have is that when those problems either go away or they have failed to address those problems, then their relevance goes away. Why do these organizations not go away? Well, they have to perpetually, reinvent themselves and get you to believe that they're still relevant, that they're going to do this for you, that they're going to do this for you. And I find it interesting how, we've got so many really old organizations that still exist today that I just don't think that are really that relevant, that the reason that they started, has really become, again, like unions with dirt floors. Who's working in a dirt floor area anymore? Do we really need to have unions doing and basically taking your good hard-earned wages away from you so that they can continue to have the greatest golf courses in the world and some of the greatest pensions and salaries, known in the free world? I can't come up with a better word to say that, they tend to become parasitical within whatever those host bodies that are carrying them are willing to at least pay for them, whether it be the auto industry, the teachers' unions, or what have you. They have become more of the bane of our existence than true problem solvers that, had their relevance at the very beginning. And so I would love to see some of these organizations go, you know what? Here we go. We're, we've kind of ran our course. We're obsolete. So we're basically going to, go away. We're just going to go get a real job and go do something different because we've solved the problem and you can thank us later. Wow, that would be very noble, but apparently there's some nobility lost in that. But anyway, I digress. I was talking about militias and having an out-of-the-box type of solution for our safety concerns as well as our public service as far as there's the safety side and there is the the law enforcement and so forth. And do we really need to up our police force to be able to do that? Maybe we could just have small local militias. As a matter of fact, the empirical data has proven that if you have a well-armed society, crime goes down dramatically. There's been some places that mandate everybody carry a weapon or sidearm, and they don't have hardly any violent crimes. And, crimes is sometimes falsely reported. Hey, this is missing, when somebody actually misplaced it. Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. Nobody stole it. I just misplaced it. anyway, there, like I said, there have been a lot of different studies, and there's enough empirical data to prove that when we have an active populace engaged in protecting ourselves and in safety, you will find that those areas, those geographical areas, or those little enclaves where people are well armed, those are far more safer than these places that depend on professionalized police forces and so forth. As a matter of fact, that even alludes to some campuses that allow weapons to be had and, you know, weapon-free zones. Same thing with businesses and so forth. Many a times you have to ask yourself, when somebody has a gun and goes off and kills all sorts of people in the theater, what have you, what would have happened if everybody in that theater would have had a gun? That guy would have been lucky to get two rounds off, because the second round would have come from somebody else. And it would have just eliminated the onslaught of bad behavior that somebody could have inflicted in creating, you know, a terrorist moment in some scenario. I believe Cicero spoke about this extensively in some of his writings, and the framers were very, very well aware of this. And if you read through the Second Amendment debates on this, that's one of the reasons why they wanted to ensure that the militia was the instrument for safety and security. And I, you know, ask you to go read what the Constitution says in Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 16, because the federal government is responsible for buying, equipping, and training the militias of the states. And so they don't have to be centrally organized and managed. As a matter of fact, like I was going down this pack or down this track, when you start, you know, mandating a central control and everything else, you lose that local control and you lose that local role that they have in the community. There should be a reason, and the whole intent and reason for a militia is not just to thwart invasion, but to also take care of domestic threats as well. The militia was designed to basically support a small uprising and or suppress an invasion. So there you go. One thing that, you know, comes out of the box when I hear people talking about this, there's no way, you know, good chance that the chief of police or the sheriff may say, you know what, that's actually not a bad idea. But there's just no way in heck that you're going to find most people say, you know what, we got to surrender. You know, we should downstaff and let the people take care of this for themselves. That kind of works counterintuitive in a centralized control, centralized government mentality. But it goes hand in hand with what the framers created by creating a distributive republican form of government where, you know, we basically are a self-governed people. So I've also noticed a lack of understanding of the Constitution amongst these conversations that I had during this event. And, you know, this goes hand in hand with all the different people that I've actually met that I talk about the Constitution with. And most people, you know, this is very humbling. As a society, we should be very shameful to think that how many people, and use the honesty factor, raise your hand, roll the window down, and put your hand out in that hot air, and just raise it up and say, I have actually read the Constitution from the beginning to the end, and I understand what's in the Constitution. Because sadly, that was probably less than 1%. And when I started this show back on Constitution Day, I said, welcome to the club, because you're going to become a member of the 1/10,000th club. I mean, there's a lot of zeros after that point to get to that little one, because there's not a lot of people that understand the Constitution. Those people who even teach the Constitution in the local schools here do not understand the Constitution. But at least they possibly have read it, but most of them have only read snippets of it. And it's just, I think it's an indictment on our society. And it's the same thing with the Federalist Papers. If you want to understand what the Constitution says, you have to read the Federalist Papers. And even more importantly, and more of a daunting task, if you really want to understand what the Constitution says, you can't get it from any type of academe or any type of college textbook or what have you. The only way you'll really understand what the Constitution says and what it really means is when you read the ratification debates. And that's why I try to implore everybody, please download. Those things are they're free. They're on the internet. The Avalon Project has them. Read the ratification debates for yourself and you'll know exactly what the Constitution means. Well, it's time for us to take another short, quick break. So please stay tuned and we'll be right back for the rest of the show. Thank you. So here we go indeed. As I was talking about the militia and kind of alluded to the Second Amendment and so forth, one of the things that this radio program, or not this radio program, but this station has broadcast a different show. It's called After Everything Said and Done by Brad Thomas. And he has a little promo that's a part of his show where he's talking about you have to be 18 years of age to buy a BB gun. And that guy, that goes right in hand with the controlling of education and the regulating of the nitinoids of your individual rights. And if we really perceive that there's a threat and a danger, why is it that the education system does not teach firearm safety? Why does it... Do you remember, how many of you are old enough to remember that you used to get fluoride at school and they'd give you the little red pills and they'd have you chew on the pill and it would show you how well you brushed your teeth and how well you didn't brush your teeth? Why is that? That was a part of the formal education program. They did it at least once or twice a year to help promote dental hygiene amongst little kids. Why is it that they stopped doing that? Why is it that they've stopped teaching so many essential things such as economics, such as, you know, how to run a household or, you know, some of the fundamentals of shop and so forth? And even the music programs are suffering on high school campuses and so forth because there's not enough time for them to teach your children the progressive dogma that is more important than all of these other essential things. And so if you remember me railing about this last week on the education system, I'm telling you that when you start seeing some of these things popping up, you're going, well, why is it that, you know, we're spending so much time and effort on the social engineering and not on the real relevant practical things that we need to be teaching our kids? And that goes hand in hand with the progressive agenda in maintaining the narrative and basically projecting your children to be good government citizens instead of productive members of society. So anyway, on a different note, I think last week I mentioned, and I still need to confirm this, that I may be doing the movie night for the Northwest Grassroots in August. So once I have that confirmed, I will let you know. Looking forward, and I'll probably be harping on this quite a bit, there is a thing called Constitution Day, and it is Sunday, 17 September. So we should all be making plans on making, maybe, let me just throw this out here. This is kind of a wild idea, but why don't we consider trying to make the Constitution sacred once again and at least try to read the Constitution on Constitution Day? I know it's Sunday, so you shouldn't have a lot of distractions other than maybe football or something like that, but it doesn't take long. It's only 4 pages, folks. Just take the 15, 20 minutes that it really takes. Okay, maybe for some of you an hour, but take an hour aside and sit down and read the Constitution. I would thank you. Your neighbors, your children, your family will thank you. I think everybody, when they finally get up and finish reading the Constitution, go, wow, I really didn't know it said all of those things. I didn't know how comprehensive this really was. It's an amazing document. And then to understand what all of those little things are, the guarantee clause, the amendment protection clause at the end of Article 5, all those other little things, you kind of have to read the ratification debates to get into what those things meant and why they put those things in there. Another thing that's coming up is the Washington State birthday on November 11th. And so who's up for a party? You know, it's a good excuse to have cake. So anyway, So I'm also looking at what I can do in getting some Constitution classes formally started for Spokane Valley, maybe Spokane or what have you. I think it's important because the education system has completely dropped the ball, and they've done this for a reason. It's not that they've dropped the ball. They want to obscure the truth and facts so that they can get you to believe that we live in a democracy and that every person has a voice in everything. And if that's the case, then why is it that they're not going after corporations to say, hey, if you own a stock, you should be able to vote in all corporations? You know, because every corporation that sells stocks has corporate, you know, elections and so forth to elect their officers, board, and so forth. So why are the progressives not telling you that you should, you know, if you own a stock in the New York Stock Exchange, all stocks that are sold in the New York Stock Exchange, why is it you can't vote in all those elections? You can only vote in the ones you own shares in. Oh, well, it only makes sense that you have to be a stakeholder in the company to be able to have a vote. And that's the same thing with voting in our constitutional republic. You should be a stakeholder. That's one of the reasons why you had to be a landowner. And it was the head of the house. And in some states, that was a woman. Some states, it was a black, a freeman, or what have you. And many states, during the days of the Constitution, allowed that head of the household to be able to vote as long as they paid the poll tax. They paid the sheriff right there, and then they voted right there, and boom, done. But, you know, I guess those guys were maybe short-sighted because they thought that, Republicanism was, you know, just this nice shiny object, and democracy was going to become the end all that saves all as far as government goes. And actually, the empirical data proves that whenever you create a democracy, you actually create an imbalanced society that will teeter back and forth between anarchy and despotism. And those are exactly what Madison said. Anyway, let me take a brief constitutional look at responsibilities. And for decades, we have been failing as a nation, as more specifically, that role falls upon the president of the United States. And something that's been really relevant in the news, and I've mentioned this before, but I want to point this out because this is in the bottom of my podcast page, this information I'm going to tell you about. Because who right now isn't talking about North Korea with the ability with ballistic missiles to be able to hit the United States? That's really, you know, a imminent threat. And, you know, whether you talk about it at dinner or whether you're talking about it, you know, at work, the water cooler conversation, most people are at least talking to some degree that that's a real problem. And it is a real problem. But this problem was created by design. And I ask you to go back and to look at, you know, how this happened. And the only way to do that, and I believe if you look at the MSNBC testimony to Congress on the timeline of the corruption during Bill Clinton's administration, they make the connection for you. Because if you look, North Korea is in this position by design. Where did they get all this technology and information? They just didn't create this stuff. They're not capable of doing, you know, global navigation with a sophisticated guidance that can actually hit the broadside of a continent. Fact is, China was unable to do that. If you look at what China was doing in the 80s and the early 90s, they were so behind the times that they couldn't even hit the broadside of a continent with an ICBM. And guess what? All of a sudden, with a flick of a pen, they've all of a sudden been able to do all sorts of miraculous things, and they were hurled into a level of technology that actually escaped them for years and years and years. And who was behind that? If you read this testimony by these two MSNBC reporters, they will point out the timeline of whenever they gave China access, gave China something, and they would instantly receive a cash reward for $100,000. And if you look at how much money the Clintons were selling our national secrets via Loral and other ways, because he was in the position of being able to declassify some very sensitive classified information such as missile guidance systems and those types of things, because Loral did not want to give this technology to China. They said, you know what they can do with this? They can use this for ICBMs and so forth, and they can actually start targeting us and become a real threat. And Clinton gave it to him anyway. Don't take my word for it. At the very bottom of my podcast page, there's a link, and it'll take you right to the testimony of Congress where Curry and Winterm, I believe, were the two reporters that exposed all of this money for play. This pay for play didn't just happen with Hillary while she was in the State Department. This is something that Bill and Hillary were doing even back then. Remember the old Lincoln bedroom, renting it out and so forth? They had no, the moral turpitude of that family is so low that I'm at a loss of words. I just can't explain how a family of such a corrupt culture could even exist. But if we look throughout time, you can find all sorts of people that have ascended to power, whether it be Napoleon, Mao, or other people that, you know, have reach their level of power through these devious means and through corruption and so forth. And so they're still a threat to us today. But I digress, and we've got a commercial break coming up. So please stay tuned, and I'll try to encapsulate what I wanted to say in my last segment. So please stay tuned. I'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. This is the last segment, and I do not have a chance to actually close out some of the stuff I wanted to talk about on Platonics or Platonism. And I think it's relevant because, and why is it so relevant that I've taken two shows to talk about this? It's because if you really start looking at Plato's Republic, you can actually see the evidence of this playbook coming to pass. And in a nutshell, it almost, you know, takes the appearance of a grand conspiracy, but it doesn't have to be a conspiracy if everybody uses the playbook and says, you know what, we need to centralize this and control this, or we need to create this organization to do these things. It doesn't take a grand conspiracy for these types of things to occur when people understand what it takes to bring down a company, an organization, a government, and a people. And so there is really no grand conspiracy per se, other than I would attest that there is the grand conspirator. And if you believe in Christ, then you probably believe that there's a devil or Satan. And I believe the grand conspirator would be Satan in driving his agenda. And the Bible states that he will. And go read Revelations for yourself. I mean, there is a grand conspirator in the Bible. I'm not trying to make anything up, but I think it's important so that as you look at things, you can put them into perspective of going, that's a part of that plan too. That's a part of undermining our representation, our self-governance, our sovereignty, our liberty. One of the things I also wanted to talk about, hopefully this week, was the Federalist Paper number 49, and some people have actually read it, and many people need to read it. The title of it is The Method of Guarding Against Encroachments of Any One Department of Government by Appealing to the People Through a Convention. This particular article is unique because it is dedicated to the analysis of a very particular, and I've got all sorts of this information at my fingertips, good old computers. And so Madison is talking about a document that was written on the notes of the state of Virginia. And this is how, I believe it was Thomas Jefferson who wrote this. I'm not sure, because there were several different notes on the state of Virginia. And this one was written in 1783. And I think Jefferson wrote his in 1781. But it may have been an addendum or what have you. But the whole point is that there is merit in looking at an overseer or the oversight responsibility. Where does that belong when one part of the government encroaches upon another? And even more importantly, when government encroaches upon the powers, because there were separations of power between the federal government and the states had all powers. that weren't specifically delegated to the federal government. What that means is that the states could do anything they wanted to, as long as they didn't, you know, violate, you know, certain immunities and privileges that were identified, like they couldn't take away habeas corpus. They couldn't take away, you know, some of your privileges and rights. But all that being said, if you read this and a few paragraphs down, Madison states, as the people are the legitimate fountain of power, and it is from them that the constitutional charter under which the several branches of government hold their power is derived, it seems strictly consonant to the Republican theory to recur to the same original authority, not only whenever it be necessary to enlarge, diminish, or remodel the powers of government, but also whenever any one of the departments may commit encroachments on the chartered authorities of the other. So he's making this argument, and if you read through this, he makes this great argument that there has to be some level of interjection when there's encroachments. It's not just, hey, please get back. There has to be some level of force when the an exertion of power is applied to encroach upon somebody else's power. There has to be an equal amount of force projected back to put them back into the boundaries that they were specifically designed to be within. And the only way they can get outside those boundaries is through that Article 5 process of amending the Constitution. And so I ask and beg and plead that you look and read this. This was a very insightful writing of how to deal with encroachments. Now, Madison, at the very end of this, states that, you know, he doesn't think that this is really a necessary thing, because he also had this opinion that conventions were very dangerous. But he later on realized that there was a power of an administrative convention that he tried to apply with the Virginia resolutions. And I'll get into the Virginia and the Kentucky resolutions in a future show, but you'll see that they definitely appealed when the federal government not only encroached upon, you know, themselves from one branch to another, but they encroached upon the states' rights and the Bill of Rights, the freedom of speech, more specifically with the Sedition Act. Then you can actually see how, you know, Madison moved with Jefferson to make appeals to the states to say, we cannot let them do this. We have to put them back into the framework of the Constitution. And the problem has been that we've constantly allowed the federal government to be a judge of themselves. And as Madison said in Federalist Paper number 10, no man is allowed to be a judge in his own cause, because his interest would certainly bias his judgment and not improbably corrupt his integrity. With equal, nay, with greater reason, a body of men are unfit to be both judges and parties at the same time. So what that says is the federal government should never be the judge of their own cases. That has to come back to the states, and the states need to be judging and making these types of decisions. Anyway, before I, you know, kind of run out of time, and I really didn't get a chance to really elucidate or clarify or talk about this, because I was really proud a few weeks ago when we had this big power outage and our whole house generator kicked on and gave us all the juice we needed for our AC, for anything and everything we had. And so I'm not sure how many power outages we're going to have this year, but not having to go through the inconvenience and the suffering, because we would have suffered, especially in the evening when you're trying to sleep, I just highly recommend you call ACI Northwest to look at getting, you know, a whole house generator so that you don't have to put your life on standby while you're waiting for power to come back. In addition to that, we actually had ACI come out and we had them, we looked into the ductless air conditioning and heating, and actually had them just insert that. And interestingly enough, I've talked to a lot of people here. All the homes that I've seen and been in, they're designed really well for heating, but they're not designed for cooling. And there's reasons for that, because apparently the winter months are far more extreme than the summer months. And I agree with that. But, you know, when it is hot and you do have 2 months of good heat, I don't understand why, you know, they can't make a better HVAC system, or I should say designing the HVAC systems in the homes here to be interoperable or interchangeable, to where they can be, you know, really efficient in cooling and then equally efficient in heating. And there's ways to do that. And I've talked to Cameron Rippey and some other builders and so forth, and they all go, yeah, you know, that's interesting, that, but it costs money to do that. And whether somebody really wants to pay to do that in a custom home when, you know, they're balancing budgets and so forth. But one would think, you know, the comfort creatures of creature comforts of home is paramount when you're designing a home. Anyway, one other thing, I do have some guests scheduled, and hopefully we'll have the Jonah Project in here next week or the following week. We'll have them record, and then we'll be broadcasting them on the 19th. I will have, and I'm not looking for people that always agree with me. As a matter of fact, I learned a long time ago that you make more sense when you listen to people that disagree with you, and you can strengthen your argument that way. Well, I'm out of time, but we'll be back next week. So please join us in Reclaiming the Republic on the show next week. Thank you, and we're out of here. Have a good day.